Chapter 3. From Donor to Holy Warrior.
The Osama bin Laden I Know. Disc 3.
War changes men. The Afghan War certainly changed bin Laden. The humble, young, monosyllabic millionaire with the open checkbook who first visited Pakistan in the early 1980s would, by the middle of the decade, launch an ambitious plan to confront the Soviets directly inside Afghanistan with a group of Arabs under his command. That cadre of Arabs would provide the nucleus of Al-Qaeda, which was founded in 1988 to wage jihads around the Muslim world. Bin Laden's military ambitions and personality evolved in tandem. He became more assertive to the point that he ignored the advice of many of his old friends about the folly of setting up his own military force. That decision would also precipitate an irrevocable but carefully concealed split with his one-time mentor, the Palestinian cleric Abdullah Azzam. Between 1986 and 1987, bin Laden established a base near a Soviet garrison inside Afghanistan for several dozen of his Arab fighters, located in Jaji in eastern Afghanistan, about 10 miles from the Pakistani border. The base was known as Al-Masada, the Lion's Den. From this base, bin Laden fought a key military engagement with the Soviets during the spring of 1987. This was a critical turning point in his career when he left behind his former role as a donor and fundraiser for the Arab Mujahideen and launched his career as a Mujahid or Holy Warrior. Bin Laden's decision to found his own military force was an odd one. Informed estimates of the number of Afghan soldiers fighting the Soviets at any given time vary between 175,000 to 250,000. By contrast, the largest number of Arabs fighting the Soviets inside Afghanistan at any given moment amounted to no more than several hundred. To assemble those fighters in one force did not make much sense from a military standpoint, as they could not possibly have any strategic impact on the war. Indeed, despite bin Laden's subsequent hyperventilating rhetoric, his Arab Afghans had no meaningful impact on the conduct of the war, which was won with the blood of the Afghans and the billions of dollars and rials of the United States and Saudi Arabia. Abdullah Azzam was opposed to the idea of a separate Arab military force because he saw the presence of Arabs scattered throughout all of the Afghan factions and regions functioning as morale boosters who could simultaneously teach the Afghans about true Islam, aid them with education and medicine, and bring news of the Afghan jihad to wealthy donors in the Middle East. A single Arab military force would end this effort and, in any event, could have no impact on the conduct of the war. Bin Laden saw matters rather differently. He believed that an Arab military force would stand its ground against Soviet attacks because his recruits were so willing to martyr themselves, unlike the Afghans, who had a much more lackadaisical approach to fighting and might leave the battlefront if they faced serious opposition or, sometimes, simply because they had to go home to their villages to plant fields or to attend weddings and funerals. Bin Laden felt that his Arab force could deliver an important psychological victory for the Afghans and the entire Muslim world if it stood up to the Soviets. To some degree, that happened because bin Laden's stand against the Russians at Jaji in 1987 was lionized not only in Jihad magazine but also in the mainstream Arab press, turning bin Laden into an authentic war hero and providing a boost to recruitment efforts for Muslims around the world to come to the Afghan jihad. Jaji would be bin Laden's first brush with publicity, and over time, the shy millionaire would increasingly come to appreciate the spotlight. But the Battle of Jaji was only a morale booster, no more. It was not a battle of strategic significance to be compared with Ahmad Shah Massoud's resistance to several major Soviet offensives against his stronghold in the Panjshir Valley in the 1980s. At the same time that bin Laden was building up his small military operation in Jaji, he was also growing closer to the militants of Egypt's jihad group, first Abu Hafs and Abu Ubaidah, who fought with him at Jaji, and later Ayman al-Zawahiri, at that time working in Peshawar as a surgeon. Jihad Magazine, issue 53, April 1989. In this period, bin Laden was generally known as Abu Abdallah, the father of Abdallah, his oldest son. When Abu Abdallah bin Laden created Masada al-Ansar, the lion's den of the supporters, a young man called Abu Hanifa joined it and was very pleased by this group. Abu Abdallah bin Laden asked him to represent the group in Saudi Arabia and to preach about the lion's den. Therefore, a group of young men departed from Taif in Saudi Arabia for Jaji. This was the first year of the inception by Abu Abdallah of the lion's den in 1986. And this was very hard for the souls because it started during the winter and snow covered the mountains. And you could not even go out during the sunny days because the cold was stronger than the sun's heat. Jamal Khalifa, bin Laden's closest friend from university, was not impressed by bin Laden's plans to set up a military operation right next door to a Soviet military post at Jaji in central eastern Afghanistan. Not only did Khalifa know that bin Laden had absolutely no military experience, he was also concerned that his friend was sending idealistic young Arabs to the Afghan front lines on kamikaze missions. He talks of his confrontation with bin Laden inside the Jaji base, known as the Masada, the lion's den, in 1986. "I decided to go myself to see what's going on there. I stayed 3 days in the Masada. I started to ask the people how it's going. They said, 'Every day we have plenty of shahids, martyrs, people dying.' I said, 'Why? They are not trained and they are very young. They don't have experience and they are facing the Soviets. It's not a joke.' Then I went to Abu Ubaidah. He was the chief of the staff for bin Laden. I asked Abu Ubaidah, 'Is this the right place to have this kind of camp everybody can see?' He said, 'No.' I said, 'You are a person who knows the danger of this place.' I was really very angry. You know, in Islam, blood, it means something. You can throw away the Quran, but not drop the blood of a person. So I said, 'Okay, I'm going to face Osama.' So I sat down with Osama in his tent underground. I told him, 'Osama, everybody is against this idea why you are here. Don't you know that this is very dangerous?' He said, 'We came to be in the front.' I said, 'No, we did not come to be in the front. We came to act as supporters of the Afghans.' I told him, 'Every drop of blood bleeds here in this place. God will ask you about it in the hereafter. Everybody's saying this is wrong. So, Osama, please leave the place right now.' Everybody was hearing our argument. Our voices became hard. I was really very angry. 'This is our first time to be like this.' I told him, 'Look, you will leave the place or I will never see you again.' He told me, 'Do whatever you want.' So I left." Demonstrating the zeal of a fanatic, bin Laden told the Syrian journalist Basil Mohammed that he hoped his new base would draw heavy Soviet firepower. "God willing, we want the lion's den in Jaji to be the first thing that the enemy faces. Its place as the first camp visible to the enemy means that they will focus their bombardments on us in an extreme manner." Hassan Abd Rabah al-Surehi was an early Saudi recruit to the jihad in Afghanistan who joined Osama bin Laden in the al-Masada near Jaji. He recalled that experience when he was interviewed by Hassin al-Banyan of the Al-Sharq al-Awsat newspaper in the fall of 2001. "Those who were going for jihad from Saudi Arabia to Afghanistan were many in 1987. When I went to take my ticket to Islamabad, I realized that many had preceded me to the reservations office. There were about 20 young Saudis from various cities on the same flight. Sometimes there were about 75 youths on each flight. In other words, there were approximately 225 young men on three flights in 1 week. I found out that conditions in Peshawar Airport were different from the first time that I went to Afghanistan for jihad. This time I saw individuals greeting and welcoming the seekers of jihad. They were facilitating their entry and providing them with transport buses. Leading this effort was Abdallah Azam. I had heard about him, bin Laden, but I did not ask any questions about him. At the time, he was known by his alias of Abu Abdallah. I found out that he was inside Afghanistan and not in Peshawar, like Abdallah Azam. After I left Azam's camp, I went to the fighting fronts inside of Afghanistan. We saw that there was only one camp for the Mujahideen. It was called Camp al-Medina, and Osama bin Laden was its emir, leader. When we arrived there, Osama bin Laden was not there. This camp had started with only five individuals, Osama bin Laden and four of his schoolmates. We then joined them. As more and more young Saudi Mujahideen began to arrive, the number of the camps also rose, and then they gave the whole area the name of Al-Masada, the lion's den. I went to meet him, bin Laden, with other young men from Taif, and he introduced himself to us. He addressed us as follows. We want this site to be only for the Saudi Mujahideen and not for anyone else. We want to have a definite trend and to stay away from anything that might harm our reputation and the reputation of our families as Saudi Mujahideen. I liked what he said. Jamal Ismail. Osama and some others were having the idea, let's liberate one area and after that do liberation of other areas one by one. Jaji was chosen because of its geographical location, close to Parachinar, a finger of Pakistani territory that extends into eastern Afghanistan. Ed Girard Day is a British reporter who was one of a handful of Western reporters who repeatedly traveled into Afghanistan during the 1980s. Bin Laden had an operation going up in Jaji. I actually walked by the construction often. This would have been 87, 88. I saw bulldozers, which were bin Laden's bulldozers. They said they were building an underground hospital. It was more substantial than that. Ahmed Zaidan reported on the jihad in Afghanistan for Al-Sharq Al-Awsat. Bin Laden's personality as a businessman. He's calculating each and everything. The psyche of businessman is not like the psyche of others. He was very much organized, and he was very much calculating things. And that's why he brought some heavy machinery to make bunkers and roads to help Mujahideen, because he was in the view that if there are good caves, if there is good bunkers, so there will be good jihad. Abu Walid al-Misri, an Egyptian close to bin Laden who has written a book about the Arab Afghans, extracts from which were published in Al-Sharq Al-Awsat, a London-based newspaper, in December 2004. Bin Laden built roads and hospitals and started fortifying a chain of mountains on the front lines that restricted the enemy's positions. Consequently, the warning bells rang in Kabul to start a large-scale Soviet operation to mop up the region and recover it. A tough battle took place, and the Soviet special forces reached Al-Masada, the lion's den, but they could not consolidate their position for a long time. The Soviets lost many soldiers. Some of them were killed by the Arabs during close confrontations, ambushes, and smart and daring encirclements led by Abu Hafs and Abu Ubaida, two of bin Laden's key Egyptian allies who would later take prominent positions in Al-Qaeda. Jihad Magazine, Issue 31, June 1987. With our four automobiles against the Warsaw Pact. Background on the Battle of Jaji. Recounting the Battle of Jaji, beginning the night of Ramadan. The enemy tried to take over, but every time they tried, our men hit them with weapons. And they tried again for another hit with their commandos, but we hit them with our rocket-propelled grenades. And we saw them retreating with our telescopes. Russia lost many of their well-respected commandos to the Mujahideen. Hutaifa Azam, then in his mid-teens, was with his father Abdullah Azam and bin Laden as they battled the Soviets at Jaji. While Azam was perfectly happy to take on the Soviets personally, he would later oppose bin Laden's plan to set up his own separate Arab military force to fight the communists. He recalls the experience. Father was there. Bin Laden was there, and my brother-in-law was injured. He was kept in the hospital for more than 15 months. The mountains surrounding Jaji were like a jungle. The airplanes were dropping bombs, napalm. 1.5 tons of bombs every 5 or 10 seconds, and after 1 month, you couldn't find a single tree on those mountains. After more than 1 week of bombarding that area, the Russian special forces started coming. We were waiting. the Afghans left the area, and 70 Arabs stayed. We got some prisoners. Some Russians were killed. All the Afghans started talking about the Arabs and the bravery of the Arabs defending that area. We lost 17 Arabs in one battle. Essam Deraz, an Egyptian writer and filmmaker, covered the battles in Jaji in 1987. He explains that Jaji was the making of bin Laden. I went to Afghanistan 1986. I knew that some Egyptian journalists visited before me, but they went as journalists. You know, 2 weeks, make interviews and visit places. I am different. I want to live the question, right from inside. I must go to the camps of refugees, to sleep with them, to eat like them. I must be with them and attack with them. I went about 5 times, and every time for between 3 or 4 months. They picked the site at Jaji because it was on the front lines. In 87, it was a very important battle. The Arab group fought against Russian commandos. Not more than 50 or 60 young Arabs, 21, 22 years old. Most of them students at the universities. Bin Laden fought in this battle like a private. The Russian bombing went on for 1 week. They discovered that Russian commandos were encircling them. Abu Hafs and Osama decided to come out of the Masada, Lion's Den. The Russians thought they were all dead. 2 or 3 months I was with him daily under the bunker, fighting. It was clear now he'd be the leader. I was near him in the battle many months, and he was really brave. That's why he got respect from Afghans and Arabs. Khalid Khawaja, a former Pakistani Air Force officer, fought with bin Laden on the front lines in Jaji in 1987. In 1987, I participated in the Jaji battle. I was introduced to Abu Abdullah bin Laden. First of all, he's not a genius. He was 30 when I met him. He prayed a lot, always smiling. As a personality, I never thought he would make a place in history. He is not charismatic. He is not very intelligent. But he is the most dedicated and self-sacrificing person to a degree that is unparalleled. He would spend money like water. No one sacrifices like him. At the time, he did not love publicity. He used to hide himself. Jihad Magazine, Issue 53, April 1989. The Martyr, Abu Khalil. This entry gives a sense of the difficult conditions the Mujahideen faced in Jaji. He stayed a whole year in the Masada, the Lion's Den, and everyone that visited al-Masada could see the struggle of staying there for even 4 months. The snow was covering the earth face, and the Mujahideen could not even see the sun at midday because of the cold, and they were putting water in plastic bottles and would wake up and see them frozen. In this environment, where the body extremities were freezing, Abu Khalil swore not to go down. Abu Khalil burned the enemy's back with projectiles, and the mortar was his musical instrument. Wael Julaidan is a Saudi who was present at the Battle of Jaji. When that big attack came from the Soviets on Jaji, bin Laden was alone there without the help of the Afghans. And he believed that by staying there, by resisting that attack, that area has been saved from the Soviets. And that's when everybody started to know about Osama, that he confronted this attack and defended Jaji. We were all there at the beginning of the fight, but that took 22 days, the fight. So Osama was there until the end, and he came out with a victory. That made him think forward more, what is next? From an interview with Basil Mohammed, the Syrian journalist, after the Battle of Jaji. At 7 a.m. on the 27th morning of Ramadan, 1404, Wednesday, 27 June 1987, most of the people were sleeping in the camp because it was Ramadan. Then I saw things that, by God, I have never seen like before. A Soviet airplane, a MiG, I believe, passed by in front of us when a group of our Afghan Mujahideen brothers grouped together and attacked. The plane then broke to pieces as it fell right in front of our eyes. This battle is what gave me the strong will to continue with this war. For bin Laden, it would not have been a coincidence that this key battle took place on the 27th of Ramadan, an especially sacred day in the Muslim calendar, known as the Night of Power, or Laylat al-Qadr. Muslims believe that on this day is when destiny is decided, and the gates of heaven are opened, and Allah will listen to the lucky ones. It is praised in the Quran. Laylat al-Qadr is better than 1,000 months. The angels and the spirit descend therein by the permission of their Lord with all decrees. The night is peace until the rising of the dawn. Jihad Magazine, issue 53, April 1989, explained that accounts of the Jaji battle were a tremendous recruiting device for Arabs drawn to the Afghan jihad. After the victorious battle of Masada in Jaji in 1987, the youths started coming in waves. The number of young Arabs arriving in Afghanistan was getting much bigger. It was during the period of the Jaji battles in the spring and summer of 1987 that bin Laden would discover for the first time the power of the press to burnish his image as a holy warrior. The first journalist from the mainstream Arab media to cover bin Laden was Jamal Khashoggi, a Saudi who was studying in the United States as the Afghan war intensified during the early 80s. Jamal Khashoggi. I was introduced to political Islam, and I become an activist in a sense. It was after 1980, with the Iranian Revolution and the rise of Islamic awareness throughout the world. I was still living in Terre Haute, Indiana, at that time, and I begin to attend Islamic conferences and meetings. I met Abdullah Azam in the States once. 7 months after my graduation from Indiana, I ended up working in a Saudi newspaper. I was about 24 or 25. I was religious at that time. In late 87, I had a scoop. I was invited to write about the role of Arab Mujahideen in Afghanistan, and I liked the idea. It was Osama who invited me. I knew him slightly in Jeddah. We are from the same generation, same background. I went to Peshawar, and then I traveled inside Afghanistan with him to Jaji area. I found a very enthusiastic bunch of Arabs who believe in what they are doing, very proud of what they are doing. I interviewed Osama. Jamal Khashoggi published an article entitled Arab Youths Fight Shoulder to Shoulder with Mujahideen in the Saudi magazine Al-Majalla on May 4, 1988. An English version of the article was also published in Arab News on the same day. An edited version of that story follows. As many as 1,000 Arab youths are in Afghanistan. They are actively involved in the war and activities such as teaching, medical service, and relief work. Most come from Saudi Arabia, Egypt, Yemen, Syria, Algeria, Libya, and Morocco. Some of the Arab Mujahideen are from affluent families. For example, Osama bin Laden, known as Abu Abdullah, is a famous Saudi contractor and comes from the renowned Saudi business family of that name. Abu Abdullah decided to contribute his experience and capabilities to the Mujahideen, and he played a vital role in the construction of Masada camp, home to mainly Arab Mujahideen in Afghanistan. The Russian and Afghan government forces launched a fierce attack on the camp at the end of May 1987, and its effects can still be seen throughout the region. A massive number of trees and all plants in the vicinity were burned in extensive bombing and missile attack for 3 weeks. Describing the harrowing situation during these days, Abu Abdullah said, "We sometimes spent the whole day in the trenches or in the caves until our ears could no longer bear the sound of the explosions around us. Warplanes continually shrieked by us, and their crazy song of death echoed endlessly. We spent the days praying to God Almighty. Despite the massive Russian onslaughts, one of us had to come out from our shelter regularly to see the enemy's movements." When the attack abated, or the Mujahideen received word from their observation centers that Russian and government forces were approaching, they attacked them. 3 attacks were made during a period of 3 weeks, and each time we were able, by the grace of God, to inflict a crushing defeat on the Russians, Abu Abdullah said. During this bitter campaign, some 70 Afghan Mujahideen and 13 Arab supporters, Ansar, fell martyrs, and their graves can now be seen in different parts of Masada. They stand in mute testimony to the sacrifices which must be made if Afghanistan is to win back its freedom. Abu Abdallah is optimistic about the Mujahideen achieving a great victory in the next campaign, since they are now equipped with more weapons and better facilities than ever before. However, Abu Abdallah noted that their numbers and supplies are nothing compared to the well-equipped Russian forces. It was God alone who protected us from the Russians during their offensive last year. Reliance upon God is the main source of our strength, and these trenches and tunnels are merely the military facilities God asked us to make. We depend completely on God in all matters. As the Afghan war intensified, Khaled Batarfi remained in touch with bin Laden's mother. Here, he explains her growing concerns about her son, especially after bin Laden supposedly suffered the effects of a Soviet gas attack. The situation became worse when Osama went to jihad in Afghanistan. In the beginning, it wasn't for jihad, it was going there just to support. So that was starting to worry his mother, and then he decided to become a fighter, and his mother, oh God, it went from bad to worse. And then she heard about the gas, the chemical gas Russians used against Mujahideen, and her son was affected. Since then, she was watching TV and listening to radio, waiting for bad news. Jamal Ismail, the Palestinian journalist who worked at Jihad magazine, describes how during the mid-1980s, bin Laden was careful to distance himself from more radical Arab elements in Pakistan who opposed the ruling regimes of the Middle East. In 87, when Saudi King Fahd visited Britain, he was given a medal like a cross by Queen Elizabeth. Many scholars in Saudi Arabia, they say he wears that cross, which is prohibited according to our teachings of Islam, and whoever wears this cross declares himself a non-Muslim. And some people in Peshawar, they were saying it is a cross which represents the British ideas about Christianity, and therefore King Fahd is not Muslim. Osama asked all of them, "For God's sake, don't discuss this subject. Concentrate on your mission. I don't permit anyone to discuss this issue here." He was not criticizing the leadership of Saudi Arabia at that time. Indeed, bin Laden maintained cordial relations with the Saudi government during this period. Prince Turki Al-Faisal, the Director General of the Saudi General Intelligence Directorate, met bin Laden on several occasions in Afghanistan and Pakistan during the Afghan jihad. In November 2001, Jamal Khashoggi, then deputy editor-in-chief of Arab News, interviewed Prince Turki, excerpts of which follow. "When jihad started in Afghanistan, I used to travel to Pakistan and sometimes to Afghanistan to follow up on the developments. It was there that I met him, bin Laden. Once or twice he was invited to the Saudi embassy in Islamabad. The first time I met him was during one of these occasions. He was a gentle, enthusiastic young man, a few words, who didn't raise his voice while talking. We discussed the condition of the Mujahideen and what he, bin Laden, was doing to help them. I did not know him thoroughly enough to judge him or expect any other thing from him. His behavior at that time left no impression that he would become what he has become. As you know, at that time there were many volunteers, Saudis and non-Saudis, and he, bin Laden, was one of them. He did not enjoy special status that made us focus on him. We had no information that he had contacts with any foreign government agencies, such as the CIA, except the Pakistanis." Allow me to take a quick detour here on the question of the CIA's complicity, or lack thereof, in the rise of bin Laden and the Afghan Arabs. The agency directed around $3 billion to the Afghan Mujahideen during the war against the Soviets. But there is no evidence that any of that money went to the Afghan Arabs, nor is there any evidence of CIA personnel meeting with bin Laden or anyone in his circle. However, the notion that bin Laden is a CIA creation and that the 9/11 attacks were therefore some form of blowback from the CIA operation during the Afghan jihad is a boilerplate analysis among leftists and conspiracists around the world. Indian novelist Arundhati Roy, for instance, has written that bin Laden was among the jihadis who moved to Afghanistan in 1979 When the CIA commenced its operations there, bin Laden has the distinction of being created by the CIA. The American filmmaker, author, blowhard Michael Moore similarly believes, "We created the monster known as Osama bin Laden. Where did he go to terrorist school? At the CIA." The theory that bin Laden was created by the CIA is invariably advanced as an axiom with no supporting evidence. The real problem is not that the CIA helped bin Laden during the 1980s, but that the agency simply had no idea of his possible significance until the bin Laden unit was set up within the CIA in January 1996. Since 9/11, al-Qaeda insiders have responded to the erroneous assertions that the CIA had some kind of relationship with bin Laden. Ayman al-Zawahiri, from his autobiographical Knights Under the Banner of the Prophet, published in December 2001. "The truth that everyone should learn is that the United States did not give one penny in aid to the Arab Mujahideen. Is it possible that Osama bin Laden, who in his lectures in the year 1987 called for the boycott of U.S. goods as a form of support for the Intifada in Palestine, is a U.S. agent in Afghanistan?" Abu Musab al-Suri, long an associate of bin Laden's, released a 1,500-page book titled The International Islamic Resistance Call, which was posted on the Internet in November 2004. "It is a big lie that the Afghan Arabs were formed with the backing of the CIA, whose minions were bin Laden and Azam. The truth is that Saudi intelligence agencies did have involvement with bin Laden, and elements of their apparatus did send assistance from Saudi Arabia. Yet the accusation that bin Laden was an employee of the CIA is false."